The journey from small to nothing at all. It turns out that getting around "life comes from life" is no easy feat. Absolute beginnings don't seem to exist, but the urge to go smaller and smaller is irresistible to scientists. The oldest living things were microscopic in size, much smaller than cells, which didn't evolve until hundreds of millions of years later. The most recent finds indicate that 3.5 billion years ago, only a billion years after Earth was formed, complex microbial life had already taken hold. There may be fossils of bacteria detectable in very old rocks, as some microbiologists believe. But every time one is discovered and dated, it gets challenged. It's extremely difficult to know if you're looking at a fossil or the traces of a crystal. Perhaps the secret lies at a level even smaller than bacteria and viruses. So we could knock on the door of molecular biology, the field that has revealed everything we covered about hemoglobin and chlorophyll. The scientist who answers the door would only shake his head if we ask where life came from. The organic chemicals I study already exist in living things, he says. No one knows where they originated. Chemicals don't leave fossils. We could remind him that evidence of amino acids has been found on meteorites. Other people speculate that life may have existed on Mars before it evolved here on Earth. If a big enough asteroid hit Mars, it could have blown chunks of rocks into space. And if one of those arrived on Earth, and the life sticking to it survived the journey through outer space, maybe that's how organic chemicals began here. Our molecular biologist offers a dismissive remark as he shuts the door. These kinds of speculations are closer to science fiction than science. They have no evidence to back them up. Sorry. And so it goes, like a bad dream in which an endless corridor leads to one door after another, endlessly. No matter how small you reduce the problem, there is always a smaller level, until the whole thing, matter, energy, time, and space, vanishes into the quantum vacuum and leaves us with a very frustrating situation. Because there has to be an answer. After all, life is here, all around us. The journey from living things that takes us to nothing must be reversible. Life comes from life. Doesn't let us off the hook for explaining how, to begin with, life entered the picture. In a curious and very clever way, one of the originators of the multiverse, physicist André Linde, uses nothing to show why human life must have come about. When asked about the most important recent discovery in physics, Linde picked vacuum energy. This is the finding that empty space contains a very tiny amount of energy. We've touched upon this fact, but Linde works it into the reason for life on Earth. At first glance, the amount of vacuum energy looks quite trivial. Each cubic centimeter of empty interstellar space contains about 10 to the negative 29 grams of invisible matter, or, equivalently, vacuum energy, Linde points out. In other words, invisible matter and vacuum energy are fairly comparable. This is almost nothing, 29 orders of magnitude smaller than the mass of matter in a cubic centimeter of water, 5 orders of magnitude smaller than the proton. If the whole Earth would be made of such matter, it would weigh less than a gram. The importance of vacuum energy, tiny as it is, was vast. The balance between the energy in empty space and the invisible matter in empty space gave us the universe we inhabit. Too much of one or the other, and the universe would either have collapsed upon itself soon after the Big Bang, or would have flown apart into random atoms that never gathered into stars and galaxies. Here is where Linde finds the key to life on Earth. Vacuum energy isn't constant, he believes. As the universe expands, the density of matter will thin out as galaxies fly farther and farther apart. As this happens, the density of vacuum energy will also change. Somehow, human beings happen to live at the perfect point of balance, and we must live there. We sprang up, life sprang up, at a place that has to exist. Why? Because as vacuum energy is tipping the scales one way or the other, all possible values come about. One might imagine a family's home movies of the kids growing up. Most of the movies got lost accidentally, but there's footage of one baby being born and then the same child at age 12. Even with missing footage, it must be true that every stage of growth between one day and 12 years existed. Linda's origin story for life on Earth is the best that anyone has to offer, he says, and the story takes an optimistic turn. According to this scenario, all vacuums of our type are not stable, but metastable. This means that in a distant future, our vacuum is going to decay, destroying life as we know it in our part of the universe, while recreating it over and over again in other parts of the world. Sadly, there's a fly in the ointment. Metastable means that areas of instability get canceled out if you stand far enough back. The carbon inside a dying person's body is just as stable as the carbon in the body of a newborn baby. Standing back, nothing counts that happened between birth and death. That's fine for chemistry class, but useless in real life. The vacuum state is stable as galaxies are born and die, or as the human race emerges and then meets extinction. This says nothing about where life came from, only that the stage was set for it. Linda does an elegant job of setting the stage, perhaps the most elegant job anyone has done so far. But he doesn't take us from nothing to the origin of life.